Acts about 11:10, and let me just give an explanation of where we're heading here briefly. I think probably it'll just be the next witness, depending on how long it is, and we'll take a lunch and recess, and we'll take a lunch and recess till 1:30 because the commission has another matter that they need to go into session for at 1 o'clock. That'll apparently approximately take about a half hour. So we'll be a little flexible. You know, maybe we can get in two witnesses or one and a half more. I don't know, but what we'll have to be flexible with that. So you're calling Mr. Brouse next?
That's correct. I'll call Mr. Tom Brouse.
And Mr. Brouse, you heard the admonition I gave in regard to perjury, correct?
I did.
Being advised of the penalty for perjury, do you promise to tell the truth in this matter being heard? If so, answer, I do.
I do.
Thank you. Mr. Gerritsen, please.
Mr. Brouse, can you give your full name, spell your last name, and then maybe tell us your job and what you do in your job?
Tom Brouse, Brause. I'm the Vice President of Administration for Otter Tail. That includes the state and federal regulatory policy and compliance, as well as lead the market planning area.
I've said on the podium there what's been marked for identification as OTP-7. Do you see that?
Yes, I do.
Is that your pre-filed written direct testimony?
Correct, it is.
Do you have any corrections to that testimony?
I do not.
If I asked you each of the questions as laid out in that testimony, would your answers be the same as identified there?
Yes, they would.
I'll offer Exhibit OTP-7.
If there is no objection, I'll admit OTP-7.
Mr. Brouse, can you just summarize very briefly the purpose and topics covered in your testimony?
Yeah, there's three items. One, I just give a very brief overview of the need for the AQCS project. I introduce the other Otter Tail Power witnesses, and really the main reason is just to be available.
I'll tender Mr. Brouse for questioning.
Thank you. Mr. Norrell, please.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, Mr. Brouse. On page 4 of your testimony, lines 10 through 13, and I'm just paraphrasing this, but you state that it's fair and reasonable that Otter Tail's North Dakota customers should be required to pay for the costs of these environmental controls. And why is it fair to a North Dakota customer who has, they may not have any perceptible difference between what's being suggested, what the alternatives were in South Dakota, and they're being stuck with the cost?
Yeah, I think it gets back to one of the main issues as to why we're here. I don't look at this as one state versus another. South Dakota either needed to come up with a state implementation plan, or the EPA would have come up with a federal implementation plan. So they needed to meet some minimum. So since it's a federal plan, I view that quite differently than one state having a different policy than another. And as Mr. Thomas stated, it really wasn't a choice between technologies. It was a choice as to whether we continue to run the Big Stone plant or not.
Okay. That was all I had. No further questions.
Thank you, Mr. Norrell. Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco is passing. So, Commissioner Fedorchak, please.
Since the biggest difference is cost here and improved emissions control as a result, but as it pertains to all our concerns over customers and what they're paying, it's cost. Do you have a better answer in terms of how much more we're talking about in the difference in cost between these two technologies as it stands with your revised project cost on this project?
Yeah, and it's no, I don't. It's, I don't know that that's the right question, quite frankly. It's it gets back to what is the overall requirements to meet the federal plan, and it did get down to it's putting SCR on Big Stone plant, or it was going to gas or some, you know, shutting the plant down. So we did not spend a lot of time figuring out the difference between SCR and SNCR as far as the cost.
Okay, good. Thank you. I don't have any other questions.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Kalk, please.
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you, Tom, for coming out today. You and I have visited a lot over the last few years about a lot of different things. When the commission issued the ADP, we basically agreed that this is the right thing to do moving forward to keep this coal-fired plant going. But do you remember what was the next alternative if we said no and we closed down this coal plant, how much more that would have cost?
I can't recall what the next alternative was, but I do recall even at the $489 million original estimate that that was 30% less cost than the next alternative. So we could do the math and see what this additional $85 million reduction did, but it's significant.
So we could say that whether the commission approved SCR or not, that we've saved the ratepayers a lot of money, even if we do select SCR vice SNCR.
Correct.
Okay. Then the last question I have, unless it spawns off more, is how would you view compliance to a state mandate for air compliance different than a state mandate for energy generation?
Probably my main difference there is in this situation, I really consider what South Dakota did and really what North Dakota did in other situations to meet federal, you know, what did they minimally have to do to meet federal compliance so they didn't have to do a federal implementation plan, as opposed to, I think you're referring, you mentioned earlier, the renewable and solar and in one of our neighboring states. And to me, that is different. They're going beyond what the federal government would require. And I would tend to agree with you that, you know, that'd be a fair question for that type of situation. I don't think this is that situation.
So in the case of an integrated system, as Otter Tail and MDU and almost everyone has now, if South Dakota passes a mandate that says 40% energy generation solar, you'd have to do that to meet South Dakota's mandate. So then you would not ask North Dakota ratepayers to pay for that cost, unless it was the lowest cost alternative?
That's been the case to date. We do have the situation of, we're so small that once we start splitting up by state, I think we're going to lose some economy of scale. So if it was minor, we may come and ask, but we would certainly point out that it's, you know, not necessarily least cost for an individual state, but it may still be least cost for the system. But I would tend to agree with your statement. Yeah, if it was 40%, that's going to cost a lot of money. That should be within the state that passed that policy.
And then on that vein, if the federal government ever passed a federal mandate for a certain type of generation, you would view that federal mandate for energy generation the same way you view the federal compliance to the Clean Air Act?
Yes.
Okay. Yep. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Crisman, please.
So I think you just answered my question, but just to clarify, when you say that, you know, this isn't just tacking costs onto North Dakota customers to meet South Dakota's mandate, that it's an integrated system and it needs to happen this way, the distinction is this is the right solution because South Dakota's requirement was to meet a federal requirement. But if a state imposes a requirement just because they want to and it exceeds federal requirements, then you look at it differently.
Correct.
Okay. No further questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Any further questions, Commissioners? Thank you. Mr. Gerhardsen, anything further, Mr. Browse?
Can I have just 1 minute here?
Time you get around here, you're going to get the same question.
I have no further questions.
Thank you. Any further questions, Mr. Norrell, Ms. Jeffcoat-Sackle? Ms. Jeffcoat-Sackle, you have a question?
I do have a question that Pat brought over, and I think based on your response to Commissioner Fedorchuk, you will probably, I think I know what you'll say, but can you give the approximate impact on residential customers' bills from the choice of SCR versus SNCR?
No, I can't.
If the commission were to ask the companies to try to estimate the cost difference, whether it's the total or the bill impact? Would you be able to do that?
I'm not so sure. I'm sure we'd try, but I guess I would still go back and question why. It's, in my opinion, it's a moot point that it was never a choice between those two. But if you ask us to do it, we'll give it a shot. I'm kind of looking at Mark to see how practical it would be.
And I see that question just slightly differently, and we've gotten around to it a couple different times with different witnesses. But maybe I'll ask this, and you may not be the appropriate person, but were you involved in the decision of Otter Tail not to pursue challenging any further?
No, I was not.
Okay. I see the cost difference still as possibly an issue of ratepayer versus shareholders absorbing the consequence in North Dakota of that decision. And I think that decision, you know, the reasonableness or prudence of that decision might be one of the issues here. But we'll see if commissioners want to ask another witness that question. That's all I have. Thanks.
Thank you, Ms. Jeff-Hosacco. Any further questions of Mr. Bros? Mr. Gerhardson?
I do have a couple of questions in follow-up to a couple of the questions that were asked after me.
Please.
Now, Mr. Brous, I understand that you were asked to distinguish between, let's say, a policy choice in another state with respect to, say, renewable energy standards and compare that to this situation. I want to ask you a slightly different question. I want to ask you about, and I'm not saying that's occurring here, but I'll ask you sort of in a hypothetical situation where there's a generator is located in any state, and we could even choose North Dakota in this instance. The way Otter Tail operates its system, do the customers of Otter Tail get the benefits of that the electricity generated?
Yes.
They get the energy and the capacity of that based upon their proportional share or based upon some jurisdictional allocations. Is that
correct?
Right?
Yep.
And do they get the benefits of the site? You know, there might be lower costs of that site associated with its location, proximity to water, and other things. Is that right?
That's correct. All those are taken into consideration when they select the site.
So even with a generator located in North Dakota, that's spread to the benefit of the other states?
That's correct.
And the generators located in South Dakota, the benefits of that site are spread to the other states in terms of lower cost?
Correct.
And it's been determined that operating the generating unit in South Dakota was important and cost-effective for North Dakotans in the ADP. Is that right?
That was really the main question in the ADP, correct?
Now, again, I don't want to suggest that the state implementation plan and was a policy choice. You said that it was not. It's and based upon some of Mr. Thomas' testimony. But aren't there costs of having a plant in South Dakota, such as the property taxes of that state, that would be imposed on operation of that plant?
That's correct. Yeah, there'd be likely different property taxes in all three states, whether they even have them or not.
So we may have taxes and other costs because we located a unit in North Dakota as well.
That's correct.
And you said that we allocate the benefits of the site, and we do that proportionally based upon the energy and capacity generated. Is that right?
That's correct.
And we allocate the costs on the same basis, to your understanding?
Yes.
I think that's all the questions I have there.
Thank you, Mr. Gerhardsen. And any further questions of Mr. Brous? Commissioner Kalk?
Thank you, Tom. I believe your attorney just muddied the waters for me. So I'm not sure what that line of questioning, if it was more to go back to why the SCR was better than the SNCR, or if it was to refute what you said, that you may not come back for energy generation to meet a South Dakota mandate. So I would just say that maybe I just ask the attorney to clarify that line of questioning, because if you're trying to set the precedent that you're going to come back and ask for a 40% generation on solar, then my decision in this case will become very easy.
Commissioner Kalk, if I may, just to give you some context, I just noted that there's an additional comparison to be made, and that there are costs imposed, for example, in North Dakota on North Dakota generation, not based upon a policy choice with respect to the generation. I was just distinguishing that third set of circumstances so that there was a record here, because we do have
set of circumstances. The third set you're talking about.
A third set of circumstances. I wasn't meant to in any way clarify Mr. Brous's statements with respect to those policy choices in other states.
Thank you. I have no questions, Your Honor.
Thank you. Anything further, Mr. Brous? Thank you, Mr. Brous. I believe there's time to take your next witness, Mr. Gerhardsen, which would be...
I'll call Mr. Bifon.
Mr. Bifon, you heard the admonition I gave in regard to perjury, correct?
Yes.
Being advised of the penalty for perjury, do you promise to tell the truth in this matter being heard? If so, answer, I do.
I do.
Thank you.
Can you state your name and spell your last name for the record?
My name is Peter Bithon. Last name is Beithon.
On the podium in front of you, I've left three items marked as exhibits for identification: OTP-1, OTP-2, OTP-3, and OTP-8. Is OTP-1 the application that we filed in this matter?
Yes.
Is OTP-2 the update that we filed in this matter?
Yes.
And is OTP-3 the supplement that we filed in this matter?
Yes.
And then finally, is OTP-8 your pre-filed written direct testimony in this matter?
Yes, it is.
Do you have any changes or corrections to your pre-filed written direct testimony?
No, I do not.
If I asked each of the questions contained in that testimony, would the answers be the same today?
Yes.
I offer exhibits OTP 1, 2, 3, and 8.
If there's no objection to OTP 1, 2, 3, and 8, I will admit them. Mr. Gerhardsen, please.
Mr. Bithon, can you briefly summarize the topics covered in your testimony?
I cover our proposed environmental rate rider and how it complies with the tariff and rate-related issues in the Commission's notice of July 10th, 2013.
I'll tender Mr. Bithon for questions.
Thank you. Mr. Norrell, please.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, Mr. Bithon.
Good morning.
Why is Otter Tail proposing the cost recovery rider rate design? Why is that design different than MDU's?
The reason it's different, we are proposing a percent of bill, as we did in our supplement that was filed in August, is after discussions with a large industrial group and commission staff, we determined that would be the best design for Otter Tail.
You had mentioned on page 9 of your testimony that this design reflects the rate design used for all customers approved in Otter Tail's last general rate case.
That's correct.
If the rate case had come out different, the last one, would you guys be looking at a different way of billing this, recovering this?
No.
No further questions.
Thank you, Mr. Norrell. Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco, please.
I don't have any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Fedorchak, please.
I don't have any questions.
Thank you. Commissioner Kalk, please.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just one. Thank you, Pete, for your testimony. I remember the rate case with Ottertail, and the large industrial group weighed in as a intervener, and we worked all the way through that. Did you get a sense of, had you not agreed with their desire, they would have intervened in this case? I know you can't speak for them, but just your thoughts.
I didn't get that sense that they would necessarily intervene. It was just a concern raised, and in talking through it, it made sense that we make that change.
Okay. How would it affect the difference in customers where I understand it's different dollar amounts for MDU and Ottertail, but the average consumer, I would assume, will pay more, individual customers, more with your rate design for this cost recovery tariff potentially than an MDU customer?
That's a difficult comparison because Ottertail and MDU own different shares of the plant, and we have different state allocation factors.
But the percent increase because of this environmental tariff would be you could compare that. I'm not an economics guy, but I think you could.
I don't know how it would compare to what MDU would how their rate would look compared to an Ottertail customer.
Wouldn't the goal of the large industrial class, though, is to have less of this impact on them? That's why they wanted this percent of bill rate design?
It would impact them less, and that's the reason I was convinced of it as we looked through what type of costs these were and how they would have fallen into a rate case and the rate design, you know, all the cost of service, class cost of service, and all the way through. And this was the easiest way to approximate that.
Okay. That makes sense. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Crispin, please.
Thank you, Your Honor. Can you just break down for me the rule of thumb over between Ottertail's preference and MDU's preference, which design fits better with what type of customers and who the winners and losers are?
Our initial filing, we just had a straight rate. It wasn't differentiated by class, and MDU, in my recollection, is they did allocate the class first and then came up with a rate by different classes. To say one is better than the other, I don't know. I think they work appropriately for both companies. I don't know MDU's cost calculations internally. I just know generally how they did their rate design.
Is there any way to, I don't know, kind of lay these out? What are the characteristics that are different about Ottertail and MDU that demand one rate design as opposed to another rate design?
I think I don't know that I can answer that sufficiently because I don't know MDU's characteristics that well. I just know this is an easy rate design to mimic what's in rates.
It seems like I'm expecting to get a similar answer from MDU then, that, well, we don't know Ottertail Power's characteristics as well. And
Commissioner, I think Ms. Aberle would be able to explain in a real broad sense how the customers, what customers might be impacted if we were to go to the Ottertail type rate design.
Okay, well,
very broad general sense as to, and I think your question is, who are the winners and the losers if we were to switch? And I think she can kind of address that.
Okay, that sounds very helpful. Then I guess my last question is, will you be around to take more questions after we hear from Ms. Aberle?
Yes.
Thank you.
Just for the record, that was Mr. Kuntz addressing the commission. Thank you, Mr. Kuntz. Thank you, Commissioner. Any further questions of Mr. Bython? Mr. Gerhardsen?
Nothing for me.
Mr. Morrell? Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco?
Nothing, thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Bython. Does that conclude Ottertail's case?
It does.
Thank you. I guess the option is taking a recess here. You go fast? You think you can go pretty fast?
Well, my part will. I'm not sure.
Well, let's just move on to your first witness and see where we're at then. Did you want to make an opening statement, Mr. Clintz?
I guess will we have an opportunity for closings?
Yes.
This afternoon after?
Yes, certainly.
I'll save that then and just note at this point that in addition to the two witnesses, Mr. Rolfs and Mr. Thoma, we will be offering the testimony of Ms. Stomberg and Ms. Aberley, and I would call Ms. Stomberg.
Ms. Stomberg, please. Ms. Stomberg, you heard the admonition I gave in regard to perjury, correct?
I did.
Being advised of the penalty for perjury, do you promise to tell the truth in this matter being heard? If so, answer, I do.
I do.
Thank you. Mr. Koontz, please.
Ms. Stomberg, would you please state your name for the record?
Yes, Andrea Lee Stomberg.
And I'm showing Mr. Mark. We have a copy in front of you of MU Exhibit 3.
Yes.
Do you recognize that exhibit as your pre-file testimony in this proceeding?
I do.
And was that exhibit prepared by you or under your direction?
It was.
And if I were to ask you the same questions that appear in that exhibit today, would your answers be the same?
They would.
Do you have any corrections to be made to MDU Exhibit 3?
I do not.
Could you briefly summarize the issues or your positions discussed in MDU Exhibit Number 3?
Sure. Rolfs and Thoma have thoroughly reviewed the process of technology selection that the Big Stone owners, including MDU, went through in addressing the requirements to install BART at the plant. I summarized those very briefly in my testimony. They did a very thorough job of reviewing that. I will note that the PSC in their May 9th findings of fact stated that continued operation of the plant was prudent. No one has suggested otherwise. I agree with that in my testimony. With the revised cost analysis, with the reduction in the overall cost, it's the modeling that MDU undertook in R2011 IRP that is referenced in here supported retrofitting Big Stone plant and would certainly continue at the lower cost to support retrofitting this plant and keeping it operational part of our fleet. The retrofit, in accordance with the requirements of the South Dakota Department of Energy and Department of Environment and Natural Resources, will allow the plant to continue to benefit customers in all the states that we serve. And has been emphasized here and in my testimony, the South Dakota Deaner had the right and the obligation to select BART, and we cannot operate the plant without complying with their determination. I will also reiterate that each state that has the responsibility to develop environmental programs for their states may do so differently than their neighbors, as North Dakota has in many instances, and I guess bringing to mind our coal reclamation standards in this state are more stringent than many other states. For many years, the state had a one-hour SO2 standard that was more stringent than federal standards. Our coal ash disposal regulations in this state far surpass what is done in most other states, including our neighbor Montana. And these costs have been borne by MDU's customers in South Dakota and Montana for decades. So it's not completely untoward that a state will have state-specific regulations without federal mandates that are different than other states and that drive costs for everyone in an integrated system. That would be my summary.
And I have one additional question for you, Ms. Stomberg. As a Montana Dakota's representative of one of the owners of the Big Stone plant, did you perceive that South Dakota's determination of BART for the Big Stone plant was supportable?
Absolutely, based on what I know about those rules. There was a great deal of work done by Otter Tail, by us, and by the state to make this determination.
So did you see any rational basis to challenge the South Dakota's determination of BART for the Big Stone plant?
No.
That's all I have.
Thank you, Mr. Kuntz. Mr. Norrell, please.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, Mr. Elmberg.
Good morning.
On page 9 of your testimony, lines 3 through 5, you discuss a couple alternatives, and you state that although use of SOFA alone or SNCR rather than SCR technology would have reduced the cost of the AQCS, it would not have allowed the continued operation of the plant. And I believe we've heard testimony to that effect here. What did you look into any other generation options besides Big Stone?
Well, in terms of doing detailed engineering, no, but certainly in our IRP, we modeled the options we would have if that plant was closed. And that would have been gas, wind. I mean, that's really about your only options anymore. And even if we close to doubled the cost of the AQCS on the Big Stone plant, our models would continue to choose that as a least cost option for our customers.
The following question is a question I believe that was I also asked of Mr. Brouse. The is it fair and reasonable of North Dakota customers to pay for environmental controls adopted by another state? You say yes, it is. Mr. Brouse said yes, it is. What's the takeaway for the North Dakota customer on the street? What benefit do they receive from this? They can't perceive anything in the air. What's the benefit besides an increased bill for them?
They continue to get the benefit of the electricity out of the Big Stone plant, which is shown to be a least cost resource against the alternatives.
Thank you. No further questions.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Norrell. Ms. Jeffcoat-Sackle, please.
Does MDU have a handle on the difference in cost between the two technologies, the SCR and the SNCR? Otter Tail did not.
I am not aware that we have that. I guess it's possible someone's looked at that, but I am not aware of it.
If the commission chose to ask, would you be able to and willing to try to come up with that answer?
Well, there'd be a lot of caveats hung on it, but yes, I think we could take a whack at it.
That's all I have. Thanks. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Commissioner Fedorchuk, please.
I don't have any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Kalk, please.
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you, Andrea, for your testimony. How do you interact with Otter Tail as they're going through their decision process? I mean, do you meet weekly about what you're going through, or do they pick something because they're their majority in the plant, and you just follow and say it's a good idea, or do you actually get involved in the process as an equal partner in all the decisions?
I don't think we've ever let them just make any significant decision without a lot of discussion at many levels. I was not on a day-to-day basis involved in these. Certainly our environmental manager, Abby Krebsbach, and our generation manager, Alan Welty, who is here, were far more involved than I was. I was certainly aware of what was going on, certainly aware of the controversy in this state about regional haze and well aware of all of those things. But we do have seats on an engineering and operating committee where any large decisions that are made are brought to a vote and discussion. So I think there's a very robust input from the other owners on any decision, certainly of this magnitude.
Sure. We talked to previous witnesses about how if Big Stone 2 had been built, some of the concerns, some of the things that hoped to be achieved with this project would have been achieved then. Were you consulted when the decision to pull out of Big Stone 2 happened?
Well, I wasn't in Otter Tail's boardroom. That was their decision. Were we consulted? We were certainly made aware of the decision, yeah. But that's each company's decision. What risks?
So that's what I'm trying to get a feel for is, because that's two companies' decisions where Otter Tail makes a decision to pull out of Big Stone 2, and then MDU comes in with not many choices because the lead agent is already gone. Mm-hmm. What type of decisions are you privy to? Because Otter Tail picking a technology, recommending SNCR, maybe that was just their decision. How do I know what is a shared decision and what is each company's decision?
Well, I guess stepping back, I don't think there's any way we could have voted to force Otter Tail to stay into Big Stone 2. You know, that's not the kind of thing that the E&O would vote on. The E&O committee will vote on operational things related to engineering and operations at the plant. Again, I was not in on all the discussions, but I am aware there was a great deal of discussion between Abby and Alan, our environmental manager and our generation manager, and similar place folks at Otter Tail who brought this recommendation forward. And further, I know that as we look at our other generation and look at the rules, what's in the press and the trade press, we were very well aware of what our options were in this. And I don't think there's any question that as the issue evolved and as we became more and more aware of how the state was looking at it, South Dakota was looking at it, that there was really no debate in what technology was going to be acceptable for us on this plant if we wanted to keep operating it.
Okay. And then you maybe heard me ask this question to Tom about would you view compliance to a state mandate for air compliance different than a state mandate for energy generation?
Well, yeah. I mean, if a state cooks up a renewable portfolio standard that's entirely their own idea, it's depending on how that benefits the other states around it. If it's a least cost resource, it's fine. But when you're talking about a federal mandate, it's a federal thing, and you have to do that.
Okay, thank you.
You want to keep operating, yeah.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Crispin, please.
Thank you, Your Honor. My questions have all been asked.
Okay. Any further questions of Ms. Domburg? Thank you.
Thank you.
We'd call Ms. Aberle.
Yes, let's take Ms. Aberle.
Your Honor, if I could just ask Alana, I mean, perhaps we're to the point where we maybe just go through this and then is it appropriate, Alana, if we have to push back our meeting at 1 o'clock? And I would hope maybe if we can finish this, then everybody take lunch. Everybody be done.
Well, we should, if we are changing the time, we should notice that. And so we should kind of decide if we want to change, because that's a possible.
What's the latest we could change that notice for the 1 o'clock?
I wouldn't be real comfortable doing it at, much after noon.
Okay. Let's see where we're at in 20 minutes, Judge.
All right. Let's see. We're at Ms. Aberle or Aberle?
Aberle.
Aberle. Did you hear the admonition I gave in regard to perjury?
I did.
Being advised of the penalty for perjury, do promise to tell the truth in this matter being heard? If so, answer I do.
I do.
Thank you. Mr. Kuntz, please.
Ms. Aberle, would you please state your name for the record?
My name is Tammy A. Aberle.
And what's your position, Ms. Aberle, with Montana Dakota?
I'm a director in the Regulatory Affairs Department at MDU.
And are you familiar with the application that was filed by Montana Dakota in this proceeding?
I am.
And showing you, I believe you have a copy of the exhibits. Is MDU Exhibit 1 a copy of that application?
Yes, it is.
And could you also identify for us Exhibit MDU-2.
Exhibit MDU-2 is an update that we filed in May of this year to reflect the new budget dollars for the AQCS project.
And could you identify Exhibit MDU-4?
MDU-4 is my pre-filed direct testimony.
And was that testimony prepared by you or under your direction?
Yes.
And if I asked you the questions that are contained in MDU Exhibit 4, would your answers be the same today?
Yes.
Your Honor, at this time, I would offer MDU Exhibits 1 through 4, as well as part of MDU's case, I would offer the OTP Exhibits 4, 5, and 6.
Thank you, Mr. Kuntz. If there's no objection, I'll admit MDU Exhibits 1 through 4, and again, I'll note for the record that the OTP Exhibits 4, 5, and 6 are joint exhibits and are considered offered on behalf of Otter Tail and NMDU.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Please continue.
Ms. Aberle, a couple things. First of all, could you summarize the topics that are covered in your testimony? And then in particular, could you address the issue that was raised by Commissioner Crisman as to how a change in the rate design of the Montana Dakota is proposed here to more reflect the rate design for that Otter Tail Power has proposed, how might that affect different customers?
Yes. First, my testimony filed here goes through our request and how we believe the environmental cost recovery rider that is proposed meets the requirements of the state law. The tariff provides for the recovery of construction work in progress, which we believe provides a phase-in for customers, as well as providing the company the opportunity to recover costs as they are spent versus accruing financing costs. The testimony sets forth the cost components associated with the rider and the tariff that we have proposed. And I also note that the company agrees with staff witness Mike Diller's recommendation to coordinate the filings, the Montana, Dakota's, and Otter Tail's filings, in order to show a common starting point. With regard to the cost recovery methodology, Montana, Dakota first allocated the cost to the various customer classes based on our allocation factor authorized in our last rate case. And that allocation factor is really a combination of demand and energy. It's a factor that we would use to allocate generation costs. So that first step that gets us very close to the percentage of bill with regard to how costs would be allocated to the various customer classes. So in other words, I believe our proposal would approximate what the percentage of bill would do as Otter Tail has proposed. Where the difference is, where we'll really see those differences, is really in the large general service class as a energy rate, as we have proposed. The higher use energy customers will be paying more than a customer in the general service class that isn't using as much energy. So, again, ours would tend to have the higher load factor customers paying more toward this rider than a percentage of bill would do. But within the residential class, that impact would be about the same.
I have no further questions. We'd offer the witness request again.
Thank you, Mr. Kuntz. Mr. Norrell, please.
Mr. Kuntz stole my thunder, and I have no questions now.
Thank you. Ms. Jeffcoat-Sackle, please.
I have no questions.
Thank you. Commissioner Fedorchak, please.
Just to clarify, Tammy, a higher amount based on percentage or just because they're using more? The larger customers that have a higher...
For the larger customers, the percentage of bill would, as Mr. Bythown noted, would more closely follow the rate design that was authorized, because under a percentage of bill, it would reflect that there is a, on those larger customers, we're charging a portion of their revenue requirement through a demand factor, demand cost component, and the remainder on the energy. And so if you're a high load factor customer, have high energy requirements, you would, that customer will pay more under our proposed energy rate.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Kalk, please.
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you, Tammy, for your testimony. It seems such a shame, but I have no questions.
Thank you. Commissioner Chrisman, please.
Well, Your Honor, I guess something still didn't quite sink in here. So under MDU's preferred model, the higher use customers would pay a little higher share, and the residential lower use customers would pay a little smaller share, correct?
Well, we need to back up. It's really within that class. And when I say class, the large general service customers, the higher use customers within that class would end up paying a little bit more toward the environmental rider than a lower energy use customer within that class. The residential customers are essentially indifferent under either proposal, because we first allocated costs to those rate classes. If we'd have taken the entire revenue requirement associated with this and divided it by our total energy sales, we would see those residential customers, they would be protected by that. But we recognize the demand and energy factors and by that allocation to the classes first.
Okay, so it's the residential is not a factor here, really. It's among the other customers, the higher use customers pay a little more under MDU's model. Why does MDU prefer that model and Otter Tail Power their choice?
And I would first say that we're not adverse to the percentage of bill. It gets us essentially to the same place in terms of customer class allocations. We have used that percentage of bill in our interim rate increases that we've implemented in the last couple of years. We really look toward we have a transmission cost recovery rider that's in effect, and this is the same methodology that we've used in that rider application.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Christman. Mr. Kuntz, any further questions of Ms. Aberle?
No, Your Honor.
Any further questions of Ms. Aberle? Thank you, Ms. Aberle. Does that conclude your case, Mr. Kuntz?
It does, Your Honor.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Kuntz. Did we need to call back Mr. Bython? Commissioner Christman, you indicated that you might want to call him back.
Well, I did, Your Honor, and I don't know your technique for this, but as long as he doesn't object or disagree with anything Ms. Aberle said, I'm fine with just accepting that.
Well, let's get him back up on the stand then. Mr. Bython, you're still considered to be under oath, and you heard the question of Commissioner Christman. Would you like to respond, please?
I do not object to anything Ms. Aberle said.
Thank you.
Thank you. Well, unless there's further questions, we got him on the stand. Any further questions? Good. All right. Well, we have Mr. Diller left, I believe, if the companies have nothing left to present. I think we can probably take him and be okay here with regard to the 1 o'clock. So, Mr. Diller, please. Well, I should let Mr. Norrell call him, I guess. But
thank you. I'd like to call Mr. Mike Diller.
Thank you. And, Mr. Diller, you also heard the admonition I gave in regard to perjury. Being advised of the penalty for perjury, do you promise to tell the truth in this matter being heard? If so, answer, I do.
I do.
Thank you. Mr. Norrell, please.
Thank you, Your Honor. Mr. Diller, I handed you what's been marked as PSC1. Could you please briefly describe what that is that I'd handed you?
That's my direct testimony filed on September 6, 2013.
Do you have any change or edits to that testimony?
Well, I know we're in a hurry, but after I heard all this discussion about rate design, I must confess that I guess when I was delineating a difference between Otter Tail Power's and MDU's approach, I was doing it in a hurry, and I was thinking that Montana-Dakota Utilities simply allocated the costs across the board on a kilowatt-hour basis. I missed the fact that they first allocated it to the class cost of service, to the customer classes. And so I did notice that last night. I had a long time during the Seattle-San Francisco game, and I did notice it last night, and and so I guess I wouldn't have drawn that comparison or that difference had I known that before I was gone last week. And so I guess the only thing I would say to adjust my testimony is I find both methods fine and acceptable, and I believe they do comport with the rate designs that have been used in both companies' last rate cases.
So in other words, you're not changing your pre-filed testimony. You're just supplementing with what you said right now.
Sure.
And with the exception of that, if there were any other questions that were asked, would any of your answers have changed since you filed that direct testimony?
No.
Okay. I would like to offer this as PSC Exhibit 1.
If there's no objection, I'll admit Mr. Diller's testimony as PSC Exhibit 1.
Thank you. Then could you briefly summarize for us what your testimony says?
My testimony addresses three areas, including the conditions ordered by the Commission in granting Otter Tail and MDU an advanced determination of prudence for the AQCS project, the issues outlined in the Commission's notice of consolidated hearing, and then, as I've already discussed, the reporting requirements going forward. As I state in my testimony, I believe the conditions put forth by the Commission's ADP order have been satisfied, as well as the issues outlined in the Commission's notice. Beyond that, I finish my testimony advocating that the companies coordinate their annual rider updates, and I was pleased to hear that that is the plan.
I would tender this witness for cross-examination, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Norell. Mr. Gerritsen, please.
No questions.
Thank you. Mr. Kuntz, please.
No questions.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sackle, please.
No questions.
Thank you. Thank you all. Commissioner Fedorchuk, please.
Well, this is the first time I've actually had Mike Diller under oath and in a meeting like this, so there's all kinds of questions I could ask, but I don't really have any pertaining to this. So,
thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Kalk, please.
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you, Mike. I recall the last time Mr. Diller was under testimony with MDU, and it was quite intense, wasn't it, Mike? So it's good we're
it was, but we're in a better place.
All right, great. I just have a couple questions, Mike. You, of course, were part of the commission when we did the ADP, and one of the requirements of the ADP was the commission required quarterly reports by semi-annual reports. Do you think that contributed in any way to the actual lowering of costs from what they estimated to what we have today?
Requiring reports?
Yes. Meaning they took a tighter look to their pencils more often to report to the commission and maybe saw areas where they could have cut costs because they were having to report it more often?
I guess I don't think so. I've worked here for 26 years now. I've worked with Otter Tail and MDU for a long time. In this case, Otter Tail's probably taken more of a – they're more in the driver's seat. I've always found them to be a very conscientious company. I think that's borne out through Mr. Rolfus' testimony, as well as Thomas' testimony. And so I don't know that reporting to us would have made any difference. In my mind I have a lot of confidence in Mark Rolfus.
Okay. Was there any value, in your opinion, of the commission ordering quarterly reports by semi-annual reports?
I thought the order required semi-annual reports. And
am I reading it backwards?
And the fact is the company's been submitting quarterly reports, and so they're actually filing twice as many reports as they need to, but
that's kind of what the end game I'm trying to get to. For you, semi-annual reports or quarterly reports, what would be your preference?
If you read my test, I know you read my testimony. My suggestion in my testimony is that we wait till the end before we really audit and review the total costs and make a final determination of prudence at that time. The law requires us, if we're going, we granted ADP, it's an environmental rider. I think the environmental rider law requires that they earn a return on their construction work in progress, so that there's a little bit of a conundrum there, you might say. But my testimony is that I've looked at the tariffs, I've looked at the riders they proposed. It will work fine within the confines of the law. But we should wait to grant a final determination of reasonableness and prudence of costs incurred, not the project itself, but of the costs incurred.
Okay, and then the next question, Meyer, the last question is, you've been here today and listening to all the testimony and from the commissioner's questions. If we would approve the SCR, do you have any concerns that would weaken advocacy staff or the commission's position in future cases where we had to look at state energy generation by certain mixes?
I do not have any concerns.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Christman, please.
Is approving the project but holding off on approving the costs the normal operating procedure in these kinds of things?
W- Well, for instance, these riders have, they're all projected numbers. And so we know that all the numbers are going to change, right? That's just the nature of projected costs. And so I'm just suggesting that we wait until we know what the actual costs are. We review it all at once, and then we make that determination that, yes, in fact, they came in under budget, as we're hoping they will, and that in our review of if we want to go to invoice level, we can. If that's the commission's desire, we can go out and audit and look at the invoices that were submitted and paid for. Let's wait till all of the actual dollars are in. And so, yes, I do think there's a difference between the commission's already decided the project is least cost resource, other than this side issue of SCR versus SNCR. I'm not arguing that. I think the project is the right way to go, but I'm saying let's not make a determination of prudence on costs until they've been incurred and we have a chance to look at them.
Okay. Thank you. I have no further questions.
Thank you. Any further questions, commissioners? No. Any further questions of Mr. Diller? Mr. Norell?
No, Your Honor.
No further questions?
No.
No, Your Honor. Thank you, Mr. Diller. Any other evidence to present to the commission in regard to this matter, Mr. Gerhardsen?
Not from Otter Tail.
Mr. Kuntz?
No, Your Honor.
Mr. Norell?
No, Your Honor.
All right. Does the commission want to propose findings of fact, conclusions of law, and order on this?
I think it never hurts.
Never hurts? All right. Can you do that?
We can do that.
I thought you could. What's the time frame you suggest?
Maybe I should look at Mr. Kuntz when I say this. I think this can be done really quickly. I would propose, is 14 days a problem, or is that?
Are you taking the lead?
Yep.
And 14 days won't be a problem.
14 days from today. Did advocacy staff wish to file something in that regard? Probably not.
No, Your Honor.
All right. Okay. Okay, so proposed findings and conclusions. But you'd like to make closing argument today, as I understand it.
Correct? Just very briefly, I would give a couple minutes if we could.
Mr. Gerhardsen, you too?
I'll make a brief statement.
All right. Then we'll stay the same order then and start with Mr. Gerhardsen. Mr. Gerhardsen, please.
Thank you, Mr. Hearing Examiner, Commissioners. I have no prepared comments. I just want to thank you all for taking the time and spending time with the record. It was obvious that the record was pretty clear as we came in here, and the major questions I hope we've answered adequately. And again, it's our goal to really leave you confident in these decisions, confident that we're progressing on this project in a way that's advantageous for our customers in North Dakota. And I sure appreciate Mr. Diller's affirmation that he is has a great deal of confidence in us, and we hope you all do too, and we'll answer any questions you have if you have any. But that's all I have, and we request that you approve our updated and supplemented application in this matter.
Thank you, Mr. Gerhardsen. Mr. Kuntz, please.
Thank you, Your Honor, and perhaps you'll tell that I don't have any organized comments either, but I do have some things I'd like to point out. We got into kind of these buckets of when the commission should be approving things versus federal, state, policy, law changes, and I'd just like to offer some comments on that. First of all, this BART was a federal requirement, Clean Air Act requirement, best available retrofit technology. And there wasn't any question that for this particular plant, SCR met that standard, and I think relatively clear that South Dakota really didn't have a whole lot of discretion. That wasn't the same scenario in North Dakota with respect to the lignite plants. SCR was not an available technology because it wasn't feasible on the lignite plant. So even though it may clean up to a little lesser standard, it was still the best available technology for a lignite plant. So I think you've got to, just because one state picks one thing, another state picks something else, doesn't mean that they weren't both correct with respect to the plants that were in their jurisdiction. The question was, you know, I think really a overriding question is it fair for North Dakotans to have to pay for this extra, say it's $70 million, whatever the number is, for an imperceptible improvement in air quality? Well, that's really not the question. The question is it fair for North Dakotans to pay for the cost of operating a Big Stone plant if they want the energy from the Big Stone plant? That's really the question. I mean, there's all sorts of requirements that go into the operation of this plant, and in this particular case, it's the requirement to have SCR. So if North Dakotans want the benefit of the Big Stone plant electricity, they have to pay, it's fair for them to pay the cost of generating that electricity from that plant. Like it or not, it may seem silly that we have to spend this kind of money for an imperceptible change, but we don't get to make the rules. Those are made by the federal government, and if we want to operate that plant, we have to operate by the rules. And there, you know, was some discussion about, well, if it's state versus federal, I'm not even sure that that's a fair distinction, because if South Dakota passes a state law that says we have to do something to with that particular plant, if we have to paint coyotes and jackrabbits on the outside of the plant in order for it to operate, if we want the electricity from that plant, then we'd better paint coyotes and jackrabbits. And if North Dakota doesn't want the electricity from that plant because they don't want the extra cost, it's no longer prudent because of the cost adder associated with that, then we shouldn't take it, and we don't get the benefit. We don't pay the cost. Similarly, Ms. Stomberg mentioned there's North Dakota rules that are more stringent than what the federal law requires, than other states require. But our customers from outside of North Dakota want the electricity from the Coyote plant and the Heskett plant, and therefore they're going to have to pay for the costs associated with complying with operating those plants in North Dakota, whether those are ash disposal rules, whether they're siting laws, reclamation laws. Once we make the decision to locate that plant in that particular state, we have to meet those laws as they exist on that date and as they exist in the future. Now, if they change to the point where it's no longer prudent to operate that plant, period, then yes, shut it down, or our customer shouldn't have to pay for it anymore. But we'd already made the determination that even with SCR on the Big Stone plant, this was still a prudent option for our customers. It, you know, by far and away, it wasn't even close. And we looked at, in terms of carbon, even if you added carbon taxes on in the future and so forth, this was still a prudent to continue to operate that plant. Well, the only way we continue to operate it is with SCR. Now, how does that get into the renewable portfolio standard? A little bit different beast. But at the same token, if the renewable portfolio standards in another state require you to have solar energy, you have to have so many percentage. Well, then you look at that. So a company comes in and wants to build 10 megawatts of solar. Does that make sense for our customers in North Dakota, regardless of what the other state requires in their renewable portfolio standard? If that's still a good generation source for our customers in North Dakota, well, then they should have to pay for it regardless of whether that was mandated by another state or not. If it doesn't make sense for North Dakotans, then you make a determination it's not prudent. And if it's not prudent for North Dakotans, then you don't take the electricity for it and you don't pay for the cost for it. I mean that's really at a real simplistic level, but I think at the end of the day that's what it comes down to. And here we made the determination that this plant, which happens to be located in South Dakota, is a good, prudent generation, part of our generation fleet. That means, you know, we've got to, the only way we can operate is to do SCR. So I think that's where the prudence comes in. I appreciate Commissioner Call kind of laying it out right on the front that was really the issue that he was concerning, and I just wanted to try to address that in the comments. I just wanted to touch briefly also on a comment from Mr. Diller's testimony in cost. I think sometimes, you know, the law talks about prudent and reasonable. In my simple mind, to kind of sort those out, you start with the project is prudent. You make a determination that the project was prudent, but you're always looking at the reasonableness of the costs. As I indicated, there was a huge cost difference between this plant being prudent and the next alternative. Well, that doesn't mean that we can spend whatever we want until we fill in that gap. And I think that's what Mr. Diller was talking about. The reasonableness of those expenditures, I think, is always subject to examination along that path. And the fact that you approve the tariff today doesn't mean that you don't have the opportunity to look to the reasonableness of those. Did we get competitive contracts, or was there some sort of conflict of interest in the way the contracts were awarded and those sorts of things? I think Mr. Rolfs provided a very good testimony that they've done a nice job of managing this project, and it is reflected in the costs, and I think we're more than prepared, and I'm sure Otter Tail will tell you the same thing, to stand up to a cost audit, whether it's today or a year from now or 2 years from now when the project's done. That's more to the reasonableness of the expenditures, in my mind, as opposed to the prudence of the project. And I think we've determined the project is prudent, and now it's a case of, okay, how much do we spend and how do we recover that? Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Kuntz. Mr. Norrell, did advocacy have a closing comment?
No, Your Honor. I just want to thank the commission for the time and the companies as well for the work that they put into this matter.
Thank you, Mr. Norrell. Closing comments. Commissioner Fedorchek, please.
Thank you. Thank you, Dan, for your comments there on reasonableness. I don't like spending money. I'm fairly conservative in how I spend money, and I don't like spending my own money, and I dislike spending other people's money even more. And so I think that, you know, what we've been about today is talking about what you were just speaking about is the reasonableness of this. We went a long way to establishing that a record of reasonableness on this from the beginning, and we'll continue to look at those costs as this project moves forward, making sure that as it proceeds and this becomes reality, the continued spending is reasonable, and the final project is done the most affordable way possible for all the people who are going to benefit from it. I also recognize and have learned more today about sometimes spending a little bit more money gets you some added value, and I think there's some important notes here in addition to costing a little bit more, this project positions this plant perhaps longer to benefit the customers and provide some environmental benefits the customers generally, I think, like. So I'm pleased to know that. I'm pleased to have that information at my fingertips to share with folks when they question me about this project and why it's costing so much and why they're paying for it. And so thank you for your time and for going over things that probably are somewhat mundane to you all. It really helps us kind of focus our thought process on this issue and helps me go a long way to being able to come to a decision and explain what that might be to the people I serve. So thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Kalk, please.
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you, everyone, for their time today. And like I said during one of the witnesses, I really want to thank the companies for getting that cost savings, and whatever mannerism and tones that come out from here forward, don't take it as a negative of what you guys have done so far. But I will continue on Mr. Kuntz's comments a bit. There's a reality out there. When Minnesota has a solar mandate that the co-ops exempt themselves from and the investor owns have to abide by it, that's a political reality. Somehow the co-op lobby was stronger than the investor-owned groups, and now the investor-owned utilities that operate in Minnesota have an additional layer on top of them that the co-ops don't. And so to say that we're just going to sit here and take whatever states give us, we have to be involved in the shaping of it. Because if investor-owned utilities and commissions just get of the mindset that whatever's approved, we'll just come in here and pass it through to the consumers, we're all doing the wrong thing. And so that, to me, is the big overarching issue in all this, is that trying to find that right point where commissions inject, where investor owns inject, as we shape these policies, because we're going to have to live by the outcomes. And even this commission, we talked about maybe we have to start intervening in states' decisions. If Minnesota is going to do something, maybe our advocacy staff goes over there and starts intervening, understanding that can work both ways. So, I mean, there's just a lot going on right now, and I think that's the importance of having hearings like this and having the dialogue in our PI meetings, is that we all respect the unique positions that every one of us is in, and then we make the best decisions for our ratepayers, understanding that decision can be to fight something all the way through or to support it all the way through. And then when it comes time, the last point I'd leave is that all of us, whether it's Otter Tail or MDU or this commission, better keep educating our members that the electricity world is changing, and it's not going to cost us less for electricity. I'm involved more now in the MISO planning, and the cost allocation for transmission could dwarf all these costs. And so we have got to stay involved together to understand what these costs are coming and educate the members to what those are going to be, because before long, all the benefits that we have of sitting in an energy generation-rich world could be gone. So that's my opining, Mr. Coons.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Christman, please.
Well, I know I've learned a lot this morning, and it's good that all this information is brought forward. I do just have concerns about the fact that there's nobody here from the public, and I don't know if that means that they just have a tremendous amount of faith in this commission and all the people who work here, or if it just means that our technology has advanced to the point where people don't feel they need to show up because they're all listening. Hopefully it's kind of a combination of the two, but I do know that this is awful important to an awful lot of people. And between our advocacy staff and our commission staff and the people in both companies, you've brought a lot of information forward, made it much more easily understood than it would have been to just try and dig through this kind of information myself. And I really appreciate it, because on behalf of all those people to whom this is very important, I want to make sure that we can make the best possible decision, and I think we've moved the ball forward in that regard a long way this morning.
Thank you, Commissioner. Anything else to bring to the attention of the Commission before I close this hearing? Seeing nothing, it is approximately 12:22. This hearing is closed.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Taco bar.